So as I said before, I'm working with Dieter Vogel on Demand 80 project, and I will present some of the results in this project. And as you can see in the title of my presentation, there is no term such as sexual exploitation. So I will address other issues as well, and then turn to sexual exploitation. For those of you who followed the debate in anti-trafficking, I'm sure you noticed that after the Palermo Protocol, basically the discussion in the field was around the difference between trafficking in human beings and smuggling. So what are the differences? How can we find out more about these two crimes to tackle them better? But a decade later, so around 2010, maybe even later, the focus basically kind of switched towards exploitation, being that this is the main issue that we should look at. It's rather exploitation than the difference whether it's trafficking or smuggling. Sorry. And now demand brings another shift in the debate from sort of the people trafficked and the victims of trafficking. The focus is now shifted, or the focus also is on those that profit from trafficking in human beings. So there is a slight shift in the debate in the field of anti-trafficking, although not a fundamental one in the sense of measures, because we still look at the three Ps or the four Ps or the five Ps, prevention, protection, prosecution. So the way we approach trafficking stays the same, but somehow the focus has shifted. So this is sort of what demand seems to have done in the field, right? And basically, I would like to present some results of our research on government responses to demand. And my presentation would have two parts, basically. One on these government responses to demand in general, more general approach, not necessarily focused at sexual exploitation. And then on a second part, I would like to talk about the research on prostitution policies that colleagues of ours, project partners from Lund University, have done. So in the first part, I also want to talk about how demand is being understood by policymakers in some national context, to give examples that are thought to address this demand, and to also speak a bit about the arguments why these measures were implemented. And in doing that, I would like to present some sort of typology of measures. So how can we look at measures how can we cluster these measures to try to make sense of them and to try to understand them better? In a similar way, that I will do that for the prostitution policies part, also introducing a typology that our colleagues have developed for better understanding prostitution policies and for being able to compare prostitution policies in different countries. So this is the plan. So basically, these are the countries that we looked at in the first place. We have we thought basically to take European countries with different approaches to demand, and then to also take the US as a major player that would be sort of a equal player to the European Union in the field, and then to also take third countries such as Brazil and Nigeria to see whether also European Union and our approaches can learn from third countries, especially from those that have experience in tackling particular types of exploitation, such as labor exploitation in the case of Brazil, for instance. So this is how we started to look at this. This research was started in 2014, finished in 2015. So the information might not be the most updated information. Therefore, I will not go in details into these policies in these particular countries, but I will speak about general measures. So what did we find most common in these countries? And policymakers said that these are the measures that we use to tackle demand, basically. But first, to give you an idea of what demand means for policymakers in these national contexts. So when we look at the debates and the documents and the policies implemented, and we looked for where demand starts to come into the picture, we found that, at least in European context, the term comes around the year 2000 with no clear understanding, basically, what that is. So it sort of seemed to be a top-down approach to demand. Countries, a lot of policymakers, when we asked them, they said, well, it's in the international regulations and we have obligations to tackle demand, so we have to have it there. So we started kind of, we had a conversation about demand, but it wasn't clear what demand is, basically. And in general, we found that the term is referred to in the economic sense of the term, particularly when it comes to demand for sexual services, and at times this is expressed as demand for prostitution. It's, again, seems to be also an economic term when it refers to demand for human organs. So there are parts of understanding of fields connecting to human trafficking where demand comes as a as an economic concept, as what Dita earlier presented, the idea of willingness and ability to purchase a good or a service on a particular market. So there were instances where this was clear, right? But in general, if we talked about demand as demand is being addressed in the policies, it was unclear. So it was unclear to what demand refers to. So demand for what, on what market, and how does that relate to trafficking human beings? For instance, we have at times demand for labor exploitation, which is not clear what market, where is the market for exploitation, on what market that exploitation appears, and who demands what, and who sells what. So it's not very clear what that is meant through. And as well, demand community is a term used in the US, for instance, and it refers to also all sorts of measures that address demand in the context of sexual exploitation, but also those who advocate for this measure. And people within this, that consider themselves part of this demand community, at times say that actually demand is not represented to traffickers demanding people to be trafficked or clients' particular services, but it has more to do with the environment, with the political and the economic environment of a particular society. So that is what we have to tackle. So again, it's again another layer of making it more complicated what this demand is. And they seem to refer a lot to this demand community. And to be a bit more specific, so these were the examples that popped up mostly in this national context. So demand as understood by policymakers are purchasers of sex services, consumers of final products, users of services that are provided through labor exploitation, for instance, users of cheap labor, such as in households or in the supply chains. Traffickers create demand for trafficked persons. Employers are demand, create a demand, but in this sense, the reference was made in connection to illegal employment. So the perspective of policymakers was mostly on how can we tackle illegal employment. So if you tackle illegal employment, then so you address the issues that come across from the side of employers, then the probability to have exploitation decreases. So in this perspective, they see employers as well as part of the demand. I mentioned already households and the economic and cultural and political environment. I mentioned as well. This was a lot mentioned in countries saying that policymakers said that there are particular situations that let exploitation happen, then allow exploitation to happen. So that you have to tackle. Basically, that is the a part of what they see as demand. Now, if we turn to labor exploitation, I won't stay very long here because I know that this is not the topic of the seminar altogether. But I think it's interesting to see that there are a lot of elements and a lot of types of measures that we found that address labor exploitation, basically. And this list is actually developed by colleagues from Durham University that looked at exploitation in supply chains, so trafficking for labor exploitation and slavery at the intersection with supply chains. So basically they noticed that you have a dispersed production all over the world, and you do not have one legal framework for companies working in different countries to basically come up with clear measures and to be able to enforce this kind of measures. So they looked at 97, I think, initiatives addressing trafficking for labor exploitation and slavery. They wanted to get the whole picture, basically, to refer to all sorts of exploitation in whatever forms are being called in different countries. So they look at trafficking for labor exploitation and slavery at the intersection with production in the supply chains. And this is the list that they come up with, and they said there are a lot of types of measures dealing with that kind of exploitation. And countries are doing a lot, as we also found in our research on those 12 national contexts, that governments are doing a lot, but what is being done mostly is public-private partnerships. So countries are working together with companies, with NGOs. So, and this seems to be the most active in the field, and where workers basically have said that, yes, there is an impact of particular policies when companies work together with workers, when firms work together with governments and so on. So it's the partnership that brings a measure and that can implement a particular measure in this field. But I won't stay very long on this, so I'll move to demand in relation to sexual exploitation. We found these being the most common measures. So policymakers refer to that when we asked what kind of measures to implement to address demanding in relation to sexual exploitation. And the first thing that many said referred to policies addressing prostitution, and within that, criminalization of purchasing sexual services, or the knowingly using the services of someone who is forced into prostitution, as well as public campaigns aimed at raising awareness. Either these campaigns address the general public or particular parts of the general public, so they are more targeted, or whether they ask for a change in behavior. For instance, instead of just informing about the existence of trafficking in the in sex work field, you also ask for people to identify possible situations of exploitation and to report these situations. And Dieter Vogel and Norbert Seilus from Bremen University work particularly on that and on the evaluation, on the possibility to evaluate such campaigns. So they will be published soon on this topic as well. We also looked at different types of exploitation, not only at labor, what is called in the field labor exploitation or sexual exploitation. We also looked at exploitation through begging, trafficking human beings for the removal of organs. We also looked at, I don't have here, servile marriages. And what we saw is that mainly this is demand in these particular contexts is being addressed through laws, either administrative laws aiming to regulate particular activities such as begging. So begging is being allowed in particular places, not allowed in other places. It's illegal, for instance, to beg with children in particular countries and so on. And when it comes to organ removal, there are strict regulations for harvesting human organs and transplantations, basically. So having said that there are different kinds of measures, what can we say about them? So what would be the underlying arguments for having a particular measure rather than another? Why policymakers have made a choice for a particular policy or a particular way to address demand rather than another? And we try to cluster these into four main categories, basically, which each category looks at the underlying mechanism of this, of each measure. Now, this is a sort of an ideal type of clustering these, because as I will speak later, the line, it's not very easy to draw between these types of measures. But when looking at regulatory regimes and at measures aiming to address demand, basically we find that you either have a command and control type of approach, a peer pressure, market-based approach, or what was called the design approach. So in a command and control type of approach, you would have a legal approach, and which would prohibit certain behavior and would punish the non-compliance with the law, basically. This was called this is the traditional approach, right? And then on the peer pressure, you would bring in social norms and use approaches such as naming and shaming. So companies would know of each other who is doing what kind of work and whether they comply with certain standards. When it comes to markets, governments have created some incentives for companies to comply with certain regulations and, for instance, not to use labor exploitation in their supply chains. And when it comes to design, systems have been created so that it is difficult to go around the system and to find a particular product outside of the system. For instance, such as the human organ transplantation system, it is fairly difficult to find and undergo a transplant outside of the system, at least in Europe, but of course this happens. But the idea of the system is to make it difficult to find a product outside of that system. And below you see examples of measures within these categories that try to explain the underlying mechanism of each type of measure. Of course, the line is very difficult to draw because you would not have a market incentive for companies to work with companies in their supply chains, right, that do not use labor exploitation. You do not have that outside of a legal legal context. So basically, these measures are used in combination. So very often you would find that transparency in supply chains exists, but it is also another type of regulation that it is implied at the same time. So it's interesting to see the arguments and what each type of measure does. But in the same time, we have to make sure, we have to understand that they all work together. Now, turning to the research on prostitution policies, our colleagues from Lund University conducted research on three particular case studies on Sweden, Germany, and New Zealand. And the idea was basically to look at regulatory regimes on prostitution policy and to try to understand how we can compare these policies. because, for instance, there are a lot of terminology, and we heard already in the discussion, there are a lot of terms implied. So we talk about criminalization, regulation, legalization, decriminalization, prohibitionism, abolitionism. So there are a lot of terms used, and they are not very clear, and at times it's not clear what means what. For instance, in the criminalization perspective, what exactly is being criminalized in the prostitution policy? Is it the buying a particular service? Is it also selling? So how is that implemented? For instance, in the decriminalization, it means that basically a particular activity within the sex sector is not criminalized, right, anymore, any longer. But what kind of legislation is in place, and what exactly do we speak when we say about decriminalization? The same with the prohibitionism. Does it refer to the whole aspect of services in the prostitution field, or is it referred to particular services? So the new proposed categories try to look at commercial sex as between two views. Either commercial sex is inherently bad for society, and there are different arguments to support that kind of idea, and should be basically, we should try to eliminate it from society. Or there is another view, which we already discussed about and is already see that it is contested, whether sexual services are services as any other. Prostitution is labor, like any other. And prostitution should be basically regarded as any type of labor and put under the labor legislation. So in these particular, under these two extremes, if you want, different views on how commercial sex is being regarded, we, in the project, develop basically three types of prostitution policy: repressive, restrictive, and integrative. And basically, I will present what would go under each type of prostitution policy. And of course, we can discuss about it. It doesn't mean that we can for sure include policies of countries strictly into one category rather than another. These are ideal types where we can look at prostitution policies, at the underlying arguments, and how particular actors in the prostitution sector are being regarded by regulations, so that we can basically better compare and try to understand what kind of impact that might have on the sector. So here basically, under each type, you would basically, there is an understanding of the sector. So under repressive and restrictive, you would regard the phenomenon as a negative social phenomenon. Whereas in the integrative type of measure, you would see prostitution as a multifaceted, containing negative elements. So the idea is that indeed in the prostitution sector, exploitation can occur, but not all prostitution is exploitation. And not all prostitution is trafficking human beings. So the intention of each type, if you look at the third column, basically you would either see that the intention is either to eradicate, basically to restrict the sex work, or to integrate it in order to protect sex work from stigma, from violence, and exploitation. So again, the underlying argument is, what can one do for those people involved in the prostitution field? And as you can see, policy instruments that have been found to work in this kind of types are either criminal law, prohibiting selling and purchasing sex and third-party facilitation. Are also campaigns aimed at deterring the sale and purchase of sex, together with measures to help persons involved in prostitution to exit the trade, basically. So this would be the policy instruments found under sort of a repressive model. Under the restrictive model, where basically sex work, the idea is to restrict sex work to particular areas, but this doesn't mean that it has to be completely repressed. Policy instruments are also criminal laws, local ordinances regulating under which conditions sex sales can take place. In this particular situation, there might have been criminal law prohibiting third-party involvement, and there are also measures to help those involved in prostitution to exit the trade, basically. And finally, the integrative model, basically, since commercial sex work is regarded as a multifaceted phenomenon, the policy instruments used here are labor, commercial, and administrative law that regulates sex work's employment rights and specific legislation protecting them from exploitation. So in this situation, prostitution is seen as law and as any type of labor and is addressed through the labor instruments. Of course, this means that there is an implication on the sector. So again, and the ideal understanding of what this can mean for the sector, for the people involved in the prostitution sector, there are different understandings of what this might do to the people involved, basically. So impact on the sector. Under the repressive type, sex work sectors always operates illegally because the idea is to repress the commercial sex work altogether. Whereas in the restrictive part, there are ways in which sex work sector can operate legally. And in the integrative type, sex work sector can operate legally under conditions similar to other service sectors. And again, the impact on actors has been a lot discussed, and I think there'll be some mentioning of that in the next intervention. So
maybe.
So I won't go there into detail, but we can discuss what kind of impact on actors this can have, and what does it mean for people involved in prostitution to basically operate under these different regimes. And I would like basically to end here and to raise basically the question regarding also to demand in relation to sexual exploitation, but also demand in relation to other types of exploitation. And I would start basically with asking the question whether introducing the demand and measures addressing demand in this field has changed your work in this particular area and the way you cooperate with other institutions, or there will be a way in which work will change, basically. And what would that do to the field, basically, to the field of work? Would your work basically stay the same and you would continue to work with the actors that you've been working so far? Or is it going to be basically a change in the field as more actors will come to work and address exploitation and not necessarily trafficking for human beings for particular types of exploitation?